evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and oh boy, I'm excited because our Paradigm Shifter tonight is going to give you a break in the kind of thing a lot of us are worried about, which are these amazing proliferating addictions that are ripping up what families and lives all over the place. Our guest tonight is Dr. Hyla Kass, who has some very, very good news about how to enter the brain and its propensities to crave and so on and make some changes. So welcome to the show, Dr. Kass, Hyla.
Oh, happy to be here.
I'm very excited to talk to you, and your e-book called The Addicted Brain is really, really, what would I say, it's kind of heartening. It gave me all kinds of possibilities that I had not thought about.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, and I have a lot of clients, you know, who've lost family members and to addictions, and it just seems to be getting worse and worse. Would you say that it's getting worse and worse?
I think it is. I think that one of the big problems is addiction to prescription medications. Doctors are handing out prescriptions like candy, mm-hmm. and people become readily addicted without even realizing it.
Well, and they trust. You know, people say, well, they wouldn't give them to us if they weren't good, you know?
Uh-huh.
I don't. But anyway, this is very, very exciting stuff. And I often think that in the pharmaceutical world, they should do a nonprofit which supports people's rehab.
That's a very important issue.
Yeah.
Because I have to tell you, I see so many people coming into my office that are addicted to sleeping pills, addicted to antidepressants. Now, it's not a typical addiction with the antidepressant, but what happens is, after a while, a particular one will stop working. So you either have to increase the dose, add another one, switch it out, something like that. But it just does something to the neurotransmitter receptors.
Well, you're a doctor who also does research, are you not? Because one of the things I'd love you to explain to us is how you got into doing the research and what happens to people that are taking, nutritionally, that are taking these, antidepressants or whatever they are, SSRIs.
While they're taking the SSRI, it's blocking the reuptake of the neurotransmitter. After a while, though, you can block all you want, but if you don't have enough of that particular neurotransmitter sitting there to go to the receptor because of the antidepressant, after a while you just don't have enough of the, for example, it's serotonin, so that you run out of serotonin molecules, and then you need to have some other way of increasing serotonin. So you may use a different SSRI. Mm. But ultimately, they're going to all stop working. However, getting off of these medications is terrible because when the person starts to go off of the meds, their brain has been used to having a certain level of whatever it was. You know, like when you're used to anything, you know, you can withdrawing from caffeine, withdrawing from sugar, you know, people have trouble. It's just what happens. So when you because your receptors are used to a certain level. So you start to withdraw, you go through these terrible symptoms, and then the person thinks, oh, I really did need to be on the drug after all, and that's what the doctor's going to tell them. Mm-hmm. You see, you really shouldn't be going off of your SSRI, your Zoloft, your Prozac, your Celexa. See, you really needed it. The truth is, that's not even so. Mm-hmm. It's that they're having withdrawal symptoms. And there are better ways to handle that.
Well, one of the things I love about your work is you talk. We've done some interviews with people who are big on brain plasticity. What you talk about is the fact that the brain has programs in it, and perhaps they come down through the lineage and so on. And just because we have those programs or the propensities to have alcoholic cravings or drugs and so on doesn't mean we can't change that. We can't change
right.
our brain.
Yeah. There a couple of things here that we're actually dealing with right now. One of them is your genetic propensity. The other is your propensity now that you've become hooked.
Mm.
Those are two maybe related, but they're a little bit different because even if you hadn't been addictive beforehand, addictive or addicted, you will be addicted after taking a drug for a while.
And does that mean that we have like a nutritional deficiency or
Yeah. So there's something going on that can be dealt with nutritionally Likewise, if you have a propensity, a genetic propensity, like alcoholism runs in the family, mm-hmm. or diabetes runs in the family, which is actually a sugar irregularity, runs in the family, any kind of addiction, depression, bipolar disorder, just because it's in your background, in your ancestry, doesn't mean you have to have it as well, because we can actually change our genetic expression.
So how do we start doing that? How did you get into all this? This is very exciting stuff. It's a real cutting edge, right?
I don't know. It's just what is. I mean, I stay in touch with what's new, and there's a lot of work being done now with genetics. I do genetic testing on patients, particularly to find out if they have a difficulty with something called methylation. Methylation is one of the pathways, one of the chemical reactions that happens in order to make neurotransmitters. And if people have a genetic problem with methylation, they're going to have trouble making neurotransmitters, so they're going to have a tendency to be depressed or anxious or bipolar or whatever it is that they're going to be. And
they're probably born that way, right?
They're born with the propensity, but they don't have to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are a poor methylator and you have this particular gene that dictates that you're a poor methylator, what we can do, and this is what I do, is I give methyl folate and methyl B12. You actually can give the methyl molecule. So even though your body doesn't make it, we can give it to you. And by the same token, if you have a tendency to be low in the neurotransmitter dopamine, and you may not understand that, you know, what your neurotransmitters are about, but let me just say, if you have a tendency to ADD, attention deficit disorder,
right.
young kids, or even older kids with thrill-seeking behavior, driving fast cars when they're older, jumping out of trees when they're younger, you know, doing things that drive their mothers crazy. That kind of behavior is generally a reflection of low dopamine, and that can be treated, usually it's treated, you know, in the medical world with stimulants like Ritalin. But what we can do is give precursors. We can give the raw materials that make dopamine so that you're actually producing your own dopamine and you don't have the, say, the thrill-seeking behavior, the attention deficit disorder, the depression, and all the things that go along with alcoholism with low dopamine. So we can fix it. So even though you have this genetic issue, it can be low dopamine, it can be poor methylation, it could be both. You could have low dopamine because of poor methylation.
So how do you figure it out? How do you decide?
We do lab testing.
Okay.
But, you know, just, you know, Joe Public mm-hmm. can figure out not so much the methylation, but can figure out the low dopamine.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that the dopamine, my understanding, is that's how you go forward in life and how enthusiastic you are about living, right?
Exactly. It's motivation. Mm-hmm. It's keeping you on track, keeping you going.
And is thrill-seeking kind of like raising the adrenaline so that you get that rush that makes you feel
exactly,
like you could do
yeah.
anything?
Because you're not, you know, you don't have that internal motivation pushing you, mm-hmm. so you have to create your own.
And, well, that's really interesting to me. So let's go farther into some of these. What about some of the more serious addictions like heroin? What's happening in the brain with that?
With heroin, there's a lack of feeling good, a lack of endorphins. The endorphins are our natural morphine, or heroin, which is a derivative of morphine. And when people have this lack of joy, this lack of feeling good from a lack of endorphins, they may turn to heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody who's unhappy becomes a heroin addict, fortunately.
Mm-hmm.
It also requires some exposure to it. And,
but it's pretty prevalent these days, isn't it?
So that's a social, cultural issue. Well, I guess it is.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. I heard it's in grade schools now.
Wow, that is so scary.
I know.
So scary.
But that's why we want your information, darling.
I know, we need it. And that's why I wrote Natural Highs some years ago.
Yes, which I have. It's great, yeah.
And that's a really good guidebook for your brain. It's kind of an operating manual.
Mm-hmm.
It's what are the neurotransmitters, and even though that's a very long word, it's not hard to understand what it is when I explained it. I wrote it with my friend Patrick Holford, who's in England, and that was a lot of fun, too. It was an adventure. So we wrote this book, Natural Highs, because we both wanted people to understand how it is that people feel good, how they don't feel good, and what you can do to make a difference. So if you and what to do if you're addicted. So there was even a section on addiction that I then took and expanded upon in my book, The Addicted Brain and How to Break Free. And I provide it as an ebook on my website. So it's really easy. You just go onto my website right on the home page, click on it, and then you can order it. And in The Addicted Brain and How to Break Free, I really discuss each of these addictions, how they happen. Not so much about, you know, your mother was mean to you, but not the psychological explanation so much, but what the chemistry is. Because I'm telling you, when you fix the chemistry, the psychology is so much easier to deal with. You know, I'm a psychiatrist, and I'm...
Oh, you're a psychiatrist.
I'm a psychiatrist. In my day, I did a lot of psychotherapy. Early on, I did a lot of psychotherapy. I did energy psychology, you know, like EMDR, EFT. Then the more I became involved with the use of nutrients, I really didn't have time to do the psychotherapy part, and there are plenty of really good therapists out there. So what I find is that when I do the nutritional work with people, they then can go back to their therapist, and the therapy goes so much more quickly.
But you still think that people do need some help psychologically.
Yeah. Oh, sure. But it's different. You know, the real extreme example of this is, if you've ever been in an addiction treatment facility, have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So I have, because I consult to them, and occasionally I'll have a patient in a facility. You go into the addiction treatment center, and they're usually at some pretty nice places, because I'm in Los Angeles, and we have some fancy ones.
Some high-end addicts,
right? High-end ones,
yeah.
Well, there's low-end ones, too.
Okay.
But no matter what end you're at in the addiction world, when you go to those places, you find people kind of snowed by the not only the addictive drugs that they're getting off of, but by the medications they're given to help them detox. And, you know, while during acute detox, you may need, for example, if you're acutely detoxing from alcohol, you may need a benzodiazepine, like a Valium kind of drug, so you won't have a seizure. I mean, I understand that. But to go from addictive drugs to the addictive prescription drugs, I think is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
It does not serve the person at all. And what I have found is that there may be a brief transition of using meds. I will grant that. I mean, I'm not like you know, super holy about this, like no drugs, because there may be a place for them. But what I'm saying is you use them temporarily, and you get the person off them as quickly as possible, and you treat naturally. So if someone is, for example, coming off of alcohol, you want to give them fish oil, you want to give them tyrosine, phenylalanine, glutamine. You want there's a whole array of amino acids that you want to give that will help the brain to restore itself. You want to give glutamine to restore the brain and the gut and to help rebalance blood sugar. On and on. B vitamins. We get very, very depleted in B vitamins from drugs and alcohol. And the B vitamins are essential for making neurotransmitters.
Well, I want to interrupt you just for a minute and say, when you wrote your book, Natural Highs, what can people take to feel high on the natural basis, you know?
Ah, that's what the whole book is about. It's quite detailed. And it really depends on your own chemistry.
Okay.
And what's really cool is near the start of the book, there's quite a detailed questionnaire that helps you to determine whether you are low in, say, serotonin or dopamine or acetylcholine, whatever it is, and then which product you need to take for your best functioning. You know, if you have an agitated depression, you're depressed, but you're like kind of wired, you're very likely low in serotonin. So So rather than giving you an SSRI, a serotonin reuptake inhibitor like Prozac, Zoloft, and so on, we can provide 5-hydroxytryptophan along with some B vitamins, and that will provide the building blocks to make serotonin in the brain.
Hmm. Wow.
So that's how you get that natural high. Or if you have a tendency to be unmotivated and depressed, or just the blahs, I can't get up in the morning, I can't really do anything, it's all too much, then it's a dopamine issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you add in the tyrosine, phenylalanine. In fact, I have a product that I developed called Focus. That
okay.
has phenylalanine, tyrosine, grapeseed, ginkgo, CoQ10, and some B vitamin cofactors. So together, that formula actually boosts your own dopamine, so you don't need to take a stimulant drug.
Hmm.
And you can feel really good. You're not going to get that quick charge that you get, say, from a cup of coffee or a stimulant drug, but you are going to feel awake, alert, and good, and it's more sustained, and it doesn't have a price tag with it of depleting your own neurotransmitters.
So let's go back into, and I love that whole idea, but if you go back into the alcoholism thing and somebody who's going through detox, can they feel okay, or do they need to go through that for quite a while? What I mean is all these supplements, can they actually feel strong whilst they come off the alcohol?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, this stuff works pretty quickly.
Hmm.
So you don't have really protracted withdrawals. As soon as you add in the good stuff, you don't have the big cravings because you're actually giving the brain what it needs. You know, when you have a craving, it's really your brain looking for survival.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're like an addictive personality or weak.
Yeah, I want you to talk
immoral.
About that, because a lot of people really believe that it's your addictive personality, don't they? And you're saying it's not so, yeah?
The addictive personality really is, you might say, addictive behavior or solution-seeking behavior. We're looking for a solution.
Or brain
you're nervous.
Nutritional deficit.
You come home from work and you're feeling really agitated. It was a rough day, and you don't have the skills particularly to cope with the stress. And what do? You reach for a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's coping behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people do because that's what they do. It's what's there.
You have a wonderful story here about a woman who's in her 30s, and she's overworked, and she's just going as fast as she can, and she's got two teenage kids, and how she gets...
Yeah, enough said, right?
Yeah. And I love the story because there's so many people that are going so fast and try to meet all these demands, and what do they resort to? And maybe you want to talk about it. It's a lot about fast foods and stuff.
Fast foods, sugar. Sugar's going to give you a quick high.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol will give you a high and chill you out, so
and
that
coffee.
Feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Caffeine will give you a nice jolt, particularly in the morning or partway through the day when you're kind of losing it. So all of these products that are, you know, the addictive things feel good, and that's why we do them. The only thing is a downside, because they actually deplete you. They're temporary, quite temporary, and what people find is when they start to eat appropriately, like the woman in this story, when she began to eat properly, eat three meals. Actually, she was eating four meals a day, but not big meals.
For blood sugar, yeah.
And eating, yeah, when you eat the right foods, you regulate your blood sugar,
mm-hmm.
and you feel okay, and you're not jonesing for all kinds of bad stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what brought her in? I mean, this is really interesting, too, because I think a lot of people just collapse finally, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And brought her in to see you?
Well, what happens is they go to their family doctor, and their doctor says, well, of course you're feeling that way. You're stressed. Have some Prozac.
Right.
And she got better of it. You know, this is what happens. I'll see someone who either thinks better of that.
Mm-hmm.
They decide, no, I don't really want medication. You know, they watch the ads on TV that show the happy, smiley people, but then they listen to the the ending where it says this can cause and death. Anyone who's going to take a pill after hearing all that, I don't know. So they've become discouraged. They either have been to their doctor who says, here, take a pill,
mm-hmm.
or we can't do anything for you, They've been to a lot of different doctors, and they come to me, and I have a solution. Often they've heard about me from friends, or they've read my books, or they've heard me on the radio or seen me on television, like the Dr. Oz show. And I'm grateful to him because he's really spreading the word about self-help,
mm-hmm.
and that you don't have to rely on going to the doctor and getting pills. And by the way, there's nothing bad about going to a doctor. I mean, there are times when you really do need to seek professional help, but I so encourage people in my writings and in my talks right now, take charge of your health. Learn as much as you can. Be as responsible as you can for this body that's taking care of you. You have to take care of it.
And I love what you say about the brain, because instead of saying, oh, I got from a long line of addictions and everybody's an alcoholic.
Right. I can't help it.
Yeah.
Poor me.
Yeah. And I'm scared to grow up because blah, blah, blah. You know, and we hear that a lot, eh? We get a lot of marketing for that kind of thinking. And
it sells drugs and it sells services.
Oh, my goodness.
But it does not sell good health.
No. Tell us some more stories. Like, what about children? If they, for example, I guess saying what I just said now, this is going to sound like the opposite, but children who are born to people who do a lot of drugs and alcohol.
Oh, I know. That's really difficult because they've had their brain impacted very early.
Have you ever worked with any of those?
And I have. And these children require very large amounts of amino acids and anti-inflammatories, fish oil, and it's not so easy.
Well, because you were talking in here about how a lot of times it's the inflamed brain that creates, is it addiction or problem?
Yeah, well, the inflamed brain can cause depression, anxiety, even Alzheimer's.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we're seeing a lot of that. You know, there's a new book out on Alzheimer's and gluten sensitivity.
Oh, really?
That David Perlmutter wrote. Really good. He's a really wonderful neurologist, and he put together the pieces. And we've actually known this for quite some time because gluten sensitivity causes inflammation in the gut. We know that. So the gut and the brain are very closely connected.
Yes.
Very closely.
Yes.
So if your gut, that's when we say we have a gut feeling, we mean it because we feel in our gut. And if we have a leaky gut, we have a gluten-affected, inflamed gut, we're going to have an inflamed brain. We're not going to be thinking straight.
Well, it seems that your work, your ability to handle that is really, really important, especially for like little kids or like older people that are going to be kind of sentenced to a horrible denouement, hey?
Yeah. So you really need to know what your deficiencies are. You need to know if you have a gluten problem. And probably the best way to do that is just go gluten-free for a month and see what happens.
Well, also, you have a really wonderful... do you do that with kids? You probably can't do that very easily with kids, can you?
Well, I'll tell you, in the autism community, they really do that in spades.
Oh, they do? Does it work for autism?
So many autistic kids are gluten-sensitive.
Ah. So what happens? Do you work with... talking about three different groups now. Do you work with autistic kids with success?
Not particularly. It is such a subspecialty that I actually refer them. I know what needs to be done, which is probably why I don't do it. It's pretty complex. You know, and you're right. They have to be on a gluten-free, casein-free diet. Mm-hmm. Casein is milk protein. So the diet is special. You have to put them on probiotics. There's a whole rigmarole.
So
restoring the gut flora. But it's also very rewarding.
Well, what about back to the normal the children that are born of alcoholic parents or drug addicted parents that we were talking about earlier? Have you had any? Do you work with them, and do you have any success with that?
Yes, it's just they require adjusting the doses carefully. Sometimes they have very sensitive stomachs, so you have to titrate. You know, they may need a higher dose, but you can't give it all at once because they have a sensitive GI system. So, you know, you just work with them, do testing to see what's out of line, and then give them what the things that they're deficient in.
So when people come to see you, you do genetic testing, you do biochemical testing, is that right?
Yes. And they don't do all of that on everyone. It really depends on what they can afford often, and mm-hmm. then what I can get away with, because often I can just tell what they need. But there are always surprises. You know, you do some lab tests, you can really pick up some interesting things. And then I do hormone testing on men and women, mm-hmm. because hormones have a big influence on your mental health.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thinking about PMS, I remember the old days.
Yeah.
But, you know, here we are living in a very, very toxic world, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
And does that make a huge difference? It does, doesn't it? Isn't that kind of antidoting the nutrition that we require and so on?
Yeah, that's why when people say, oh, just eat good food, you don't need vitamins, that's not so anymore, because there's so much toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, our food, even the best of food, isn't as nutritious as it was 50 years ago.
Because of the earth.
Yeah, the soil just is not as rich as it was. And then there's exposure. You know, our plants are exposed. They're out in the atmosphere. And there's a lot of junk out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be very careful to wash how we wash our plants. But even so, some things have been incorporated into them. So, you know, that's one small piece of it. So, yes, eat organically and eat a lot of organic food. And eat more organically than inorganically. At the same time, you still need to supplement with some vitamins and minerals, because we need to, A, supplement what's missing from in the food, B, antidote a lot of the toxins that are around.
I think that's really interesting. You've got a whole thing here on a detox diet as well, which is pretty interesting. It's hard, but it's not that hard, really, is it?
You just decide to do it. Yeah. I mean, everything's hard. It's always a challenge. But it's really your health at stake.
So what you do is you detox, according to this, you detox for like a week or something, and then you reintroduce certain kinds of food?
Yeah, after 2 weeks, you reintroduce one food at a time.
So are we going to mutate? What do you think?
That's a good question. That is a very good question. Will we mutate out of self-defense? Will we succumb to all this bad stuff? You know, or do we come out stronger for it?
Yeah, really.
I don't know.
So what do you think about cancer and so on? Do you use nutritional support for that?
Well, cancer is really a mixed bag. There isn't just one cancer. But there are some very good integrative cancer specialists. I don't treat it. I probably could. I mean, I have a lot of information, but I'd prefer not to, because it's kind of complex, because you're dealing also with the conventional community. Conventional medical community.
Right.
And it gets really kind of sticky.
It's kind of big business, isn't it?
Yeah, and people are very, they get very connected to their oncologist. So many people say, oh, I love my oncologist. The oncologist that's giving them high doses of toxic chemo without first seeing if there was something natural that works. But there's a lot of fear there.
So what is, again, it's detoxing a lot of the time, or it's lots of oxygen and that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Cancer is the body's, the growth of cells that are unchecked.
Mm.
And the cancers aren't that strong, really. But they need to have their blood supply cut off. They need to have their sugar supply reduced. You know, for people to go... For people to fight cancer, you have to go off sugar, for one thing. You just totally go off sugar.
Hmm. Which is pretty hard, because everything is laced with sugar these days, isn't it?
Well, if your life depends on it, you figure it out pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a lot of patience for, oh, well, I can't do that. You know, then get chemo and get radiation and get surgery and... you know, the prognosis is not that much better with these treatments than without. So, and that doesn't mean in an individual case it doesn't work. So I'm not saying just throw it all out.
No, I know what you're saying.
But it doesn't tend to make that much difference, and certainly not in quality of life. So I think that people need to be told that there are some natural alternatives, and where they are, how to do them. I list a few on my website, and there are more than those even. But it's a start. My website is cassmd.com, by the way.
Okay.
And
CASSMD.com.
Yeah.
I'm really interested also in the number of young people, teenagers and stuff. They seem like they're not scrawny. What is the word? It just seems like they're so malnourished. And I guess teenagers have often chosen to live on fries rather than and Coca-Cola. But so many of those are really prone to addiction, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I wondered if you had to. I have a lot of clients who've lost a child here and there and so on. Many people have, right?
Yeah, it's very sad.
It is very
these
sad.
These kids just never had a chance to grow up and regain their judgment.
Mm-hmm. But I noticed in your book, The Addicted Brain, you have ways of people feeling success fairly quickly on your system, right? But I guess they have to want to do it, eh?
Well, you got to start somewhere. You know, you need to actually take the nutrients. Now, I've had people call me saying, I have a brother, sister, child, spouse, parent who needs your help.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, are they going to take a bunch of supplements a couple of times a day? Oh, no, they'd never do that. And I say, then don't waste your time.
Yeah.
Because... And not everyone's work is based on supplements, but mine is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some practitioners will only deal with energy, you know. They'll, mm-hmm. But even so, the person has to show up in their office
mm-hmm.
numerous times. Here, when you have the supplements, your body can heal itself much more readily. So, I don't encourage people to bring in their reluctant, recalcitrant relatives who are that negative about the whole thing.
Yeah, that's pretty scary stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
And now what about, you're talking about hormones and thinking about how many phases we go through that are very hormonal, like puberty, menopause, and for men, their own waning hormones and so on. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, PMS, menopause, andropause, infertility, postpartum depression. We have a lot that's related to hormones, and even depression and anxiety are related to sex hormones.
Hmm.
So I check people's hormones pretty closely and will treat with bioidentical hormones when necessary, because when they're off, you can be pretty off as well. For example, a lot of anxiety and insomnia may be due to low progesterone.
Hmm.
So when you increase the progesterone, and you measure the levels first, when you increase the progesterone, using bioidentical progesterone, not synthetic, which is called progestin, but actual progesterone. When you do that, you find you can sleep better, you're calmer, just much easier. You can stay in your skin more readily. You know,
well, Dr. Cass, is that dangerous? You know, you always hear about the dangers of taking hormones.
Not unless you have a progesterone-dependent breast tumor.
Oh, I see.
So that you're going to know if you do. But other than that, progesterone is actually very healing.
Hmm.
And in fact, in the Women's Health Initiative study, where they stopped the study because some of the women were getting strokes and heart attacks.
Yes.
The issue, that what's really crazy is they had several arms to the research study. One group was just on Premarin, which I don't approve of. It's pregnant mare's urine, and it's really cruelty-based, if you can think of that. You know, they have to capture the urine of pregnant mares. So I won't go any further with that, but it's really bad, and it's really cruel. So, and not unnecessary, because you can create estradiol synthetically from natural molecules.
Okay.
So you take, in the Women's Health Initiative study, they had... The women on Premarin did not have an increase in pathology.
Hmm.
The women on the combination with progestin did. They're the ones who had the serious medical problems because they were given synthetic progesterone called progestin. Now, let me tell you the difference just really quickly.
Yes,
if you
please.
Give progestin to a pregnant woman, she will very likely miscarry. If you give natural progesterone, in the form of a cream, pill, a suppository. It can be given in various ways. If you give natural progesterone to a pregnant woman, her fetus will thrive because the fetus itself puts out a lot of progesterone. And in fact, sometimes when they're not putting out, the placenta puts out the progesterone, which helps to nourish the baby. When the mother is not putting out enough progesterone, she can have the risk of miscarrying. So for these women, we actually give progesterone, particularly in the early stages before the placenta takes over.
Hmm.
So it's wonderful as a fertility drug and very natural.
And that brings me to another thing. Is fertility as bad these days as we keep hearing? Is it dropping radically?
Yeah, we're having a lot of problems with all the chemicals in the air and water, the hormones in the water.
And in the chicken and in the this and
yeah,
in
yeah.
the that. And in
yeah, we're having really, really bad problems.
So with the mass epidemic of prostate cancer, do you think that's the same thing? Do you think it's the
food? Prostate cancer and breast cancer are pretty much related, and we do have a lot more toxicity in the environment, and it's being concentrated in those organs. The only thing is that it's also being overdiagnosed.
Oh, really?
You know, they're diagnosing, for example, something called cancer in situ in breasts,
mm-hmm.
and doing some pretty serious treatments when it's something that could be very easily just removed.
Oh, really?
With a lumpectomy. Well, you know, cancer in situ is not cancer, really. It's potentially cancerous. And so these poor women think, oh, my God, I have cancer, and they have their breasts removed. I mean, the whole idea of
Angelina,
the prophylactic
yeah.
mastectomies is, I think that's just malpractice, but that's another story.
Well, I always worry about incisions and stuff. I always feel kind of weird about scar tissue and incisions. I think it's hard for our bodies anyway.
Yeah, scar tissue is hard because the meridians, it interrupts the flow of energy.
Yes.
And there are some techniques for actually re-energizing the areas and creating pathways around and through the scar tissue. And also the men who are operated on for prostate cancer very often end up incontinent. And
yeah, I've
incident.
Heard that. Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, what a trade-off. And they think, oh, wow, it's saving my life. But most men are going to die with prostate cancer, not from prostate cancer.
Yeah, I heard it's very slow-moving in
it's
most
very
cases.
It's slow-growing. Although, I have to say, I've had some friends who did die from prostate cancer, one who totally followed the standard routine, except he didn't have prostate surgery. He was an older gentleman. He passed away. And then a younger guy who... This was a bad story, and I think I want to tell it, because he started off doing natural treatments
okay.
very early on. He
mm-hmm.
found out he had prostate cancer. He had actually a fairly high Gleason score, which is not good, and should have had some sort of more aggressive treatment. But he did do some natural things, except after some months, he said, oh, wow, you know, his PSA had come down. That's the measurement, one of the measurements. And he said, oh, I'm fine. I don't have to do anything anymore. And that was a big mistake. See, if you are actually getting a result from a natural treatment,
mm-hmm.
if it's diet, supplements, whatever it is, when you have
stay
cancer
on it.
Of any sort, you must stay on it. You must continue monitoring. You cannot get complacent and say, oh, but, well, I licked it. I'm done. And, you know, this is a case of one, so who knows what would have happened otherwise. Really hard to know. But he totally neglected the whole business. He didn't get himself tested for almost 6 months or a year, and by the time he got tested again, it had spread.
Wow.
So I'm saying this because I don't want to be cavalier about cancer.
No.
And say, oh, it's okay, don't worry about it. You know, and everybody has to make the decision for themselves as to what they're going to do. And it's not my specialty anyway, but I do get asked, and so there are people that I send people to, and you can always look up on my website and see the resources. Mostly I'm treating depression, anxiety, bipolar illness, addiction, and I'm doing all of that with amino acids, vitamins, minerals, herbs. And I've developed some formulas myself because I found that certain combinations work really, really well to cut addictions, to raise mood, to calm people down, to help them sleep.
I noticed you were saying, you know, we add this and this to the basic formula for certain people's,
mm-hmm.
what, unique needs, right?
Yeah, it's like baking a cake.
Yeah.
But it's a custom cake.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone gets their own. So there's the basic cake, And then you can have little things added in based on your own chemistry.
And I bet you're keeping track of everybody, are you? Doing some good research here.
Well, it's not as organized as I'd like it to be, but I certainly remember who's on what, and I get calls. And what happens, what's really nice, is every once in a while I'll run into someone. I was at a learning annex. I was giving a learning annex class at one point, and a woman came to the class, and she said, "I don't know if you remember me, but I saw you 8 years ago, and you saved my life."
Oh, my.
Oh, wow. Really? I wondered what happened. Anyway, I saw her a couple of times, put her on a program, and didn't see her again, and wondered how she did. And she said, "You totally turned me around. I'd been depressed, and I wasn't functioning well, and now," you know, she told me about her successes. You know, and I've had women who've become pregnant because I put them on what they needed. Very often it's low thyroid, low progesterone, and when they're given the right dose in the right way of thyroid and progesterone, and then this is hormonal treatment. This isn't your basic psychiatry.
Okay.
But when you do that, then I have had quite a number of women very happily become pregnant and have healthy, wonderful babies.
Wow. And so what about male virility? Are you into Viagra and all that? Probably not, eh? Is there other...
Well, the whole Viagra thing is really unnecessary because, first of all, if a man is having impotence, it's very often circulatory.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's having circulatory problems, he probably has inflammation. And if he has inflammation, he probably has metabolic syndrome or prediabetes. And if he has that, then he's probably eating too much sugar.
Oh.
And refined carbs. So there you go.
It's so
rather than a Viagra
to...
deficit,
yeah.
It's inflammation due to the wrong kinds of carbs and the wrong foods. And when these guys clean up their diet,
okay,
and get the circulation restored, get the inflammation reduced.
How do you reduce inflammation with amino acids and nutrition?
Well, you do it nutritionally, and you stop eating inflammatory foods,
okay,
which are the foods that whatever they are.
Or listening to inflammatory politics.
Right. Right. Something gluten sensitive, for example.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's going to cause inflammation. So
that's this is a really important thing, because a lot of people are kind of stumbling over this particular issue as well, aren't they?
Right. So here's a guy shows up with impotence, and I'm not going to say, "Oh, let's deal with your fear of women," mm-hmm, you know, or your ambivalence or whatever. No, because that's what my psychodynamic training would have taught me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, let's look at your circulation, because there's probably not good circulation there.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's no circulation, you can't get an erection. The other issue is that as men age, their testosterone levels go down. So the other thing I will do is test testosterone levels,
mm-hmm,
and treat men with testosterone hormone. And boy, does that make a difference. I had a man recently who was having anxiety, depression, and jumping out of his skin, couldn't sleep. He was having some really serious mental health problems, and so he contacted me as a psychiatrist, and I put him on some amino acids, but I also did some blood tests on him, and lo and behold, he was very, very low in testosterone.
Hmm.
So even though what I put him on, the amino acids help, I put him on my brain support, brain recovery, actually, my brain recovery AM and PM, and my brain support plus supplements. So that helped somewhat, but then when he got the testosterone, he really got his mojo back. He was able to apply for and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to sleep well. His muscle, and he was a muscle guy. He used to work out a lot, but was finding he wasn't building muscle the way he used to. So he began to restore his musculature. So many things happened as a result of just checking in with me, seeing me, and we actually helped a whole lot of issues with what looked like a straight psychiatric issue that a regular conventional psychiatrist would have definitely treated with an SSRI.
Wow,
I
really love this.
Or maybe even a combination and considered him bipolar,
mm,
in which they put you on a whole load of drugs. That's a drug company bonanza when somebody's diagnosed as bipolar.
Yeah, really. Have you had success with bipolar people?
Sure.
Really? And it's just, again, how do you do that?
Well, see, bipolar illness is not just, it's sort of a garbage pail. It means you're having mood swings.
Okay.
And mood swings could be due to any number of things. Very often there's a blood sugar issue there, blood sugar and insulin issue.
Okay.
So that when you can regulate the blood sugar and insulin, very often the bipolar, the mood swings, will actually clear up. I'll also add in some amino acids, change the diet, do whatever you need to regulate blood sugar, for one thing. Mm-hmm. And fish oil is very important because that stabilizes the cell membrane, the brain cell membrane. So I'll add in, actually often just ordering the Brain Recovery AM and PM from my website along with the Brain Cell Support, which is a different formula. Just having that combination will often do a lot for regulating mood swings. Now, I'm not saying go throw away your bipolar meds and go on to my stuff. I will do that with people, and that is I'll very gradually reduce their medication as I'm giving them my formulas.
So the technique is to raise your formula, the nutritional base, slowly, and then and also get them off the stuff slowly?
Yeah. In fact, they just can go right on mine because there's nothing in it in excess. As long as if they're on an SSRI, they should take it. The PM packet that has 5-HTP, which makes serotonin, take that a different time of day.
I love 5-HTP. But I want to ask you something about marijuana, because this whole thing about medical marijuana has me a little perplexed, because logically I can hear people talking about how much help it gives them for body pain and so on. But some of those people are quite messed up when they're on it for a while, you know?
Are you saying the people who are on it strictly for medical reasons?
Yes, they're sometimes really afflicted in their thinking and moods and so on.
And not be aware of it?
No, they don't think they are, yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the things that excessive, and this is always the issue, isn't it, that excessive use of marijuana or somebody's particularly sensitive to it, it really does impair your judgment. It's like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really safe to live in that whatever, never, never land. And I agree with you. I do see that. You know, when I wrote Natural Highs, which was quite a few years ago before we had medical marijuana, I was very very much an advocate to decriminalize it and certainly allow medical marijuana because the evidence was really good, and I still stand by that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't really like is that it's given out pretty indiscriminately. It's not really being dosed. Now, I say that we shouldn't be controlling everything. We, the doctors, shouldn't be controlling absolutely everything because you can't. You know, people have to have good sense. But I do say that it's a good idea to have a trusted partner or trusted person to help you monitor your use. If you are on medical marijuana, and I do see a place for it, to have someone that you really trust to tell you that when you're off. Now, I've done this with my bipolar patients, particularly if they're off their meds or even if they're on meds. They will get bipolar and not know it.
Right, okay.
So I say have an agreement with someone close to you that when they say, and it could be, you know, it could be an adult child as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have one of my bipolar patients is in her 70s, and she has, and I set it up that she has an agreement with her daughter that when she's starting to get manic to let her know that or to call me, and I'll get involved because people need to be monitored.
Well, yeah,
you know,
because we don't even really see what we do.
Ourselves.
No, we don't. Most of us don't see what we do. I just want to go back to the marijuana. I'm not a druggie or anything, but back in the 60s or early 70s, we did a little bit of marijuana here and there, and I got really paranoid. And so I don't, of course, go near it. But I watch some of this, and I feel like people are so unaware of what could pull them down.
Yeah, you know? Any inebriant is going to have effects on your consciousness. And it's going to make you, it can dull your consciousness. It can make you paranoid. It can be stimulating. It can make it dangerous for you to drive.
Mm-hmm.
So many things go on
when
you're taking an inebriant, such as marijuana, and it's very, very strong these days,
much stronger
than in the 60s.
Yeah, way stronger. I hear that. I haven't gone near it, but, you know,
and
I just see.
I haven't either. I've never liked it. I think I'm too much of a controlled person that I don't really like to get, I just don't like the effect of any kind. I don't drink either. Drinking just makes me feel bad.
Oh, really? Well,
so, that's too bad.
So you don't need to go on your own potions, although I think they're good for so many things. I remember drinking a lot of coffee, and I took myself off one day with L-tyrosine. I had no reaction at all.
Oh, isn't that something? Yeah, you can do that.
No reaction at all.
Yeah, people tell me that. I had a woman, this is great, I have a networking group of practitioners, health practitioners. One woman got up in the meeting, she says, I have to say something. She said, I heard you speaking about getting off of SSRIs with 5-HTP, so I figured after 20 years on an SSRI, it was time to get off, because she said I'd never been successful before. So I just did what you said. You know, it was just, I just described, you know, you gradually add more 5-HTP and you gradually reduce, in her case, she was on Zoloft, you gradually reduce the Zoloft, and there you go. And she said, and I did it. I didn't believe it. She said, I didn't believe it was really going to work. And she said, I've been off it now for months, and I am still taking 5-HTP, and I feel great.
Aww.
And I realized that I wasn't really thinking so clearly on the Zoloft.
Isn't that a wonderful story? I mean,
it's a good story, and she said this in front of all my colleagues, so I was really happy.
Yay!
Because it's really spreading the word. I mean, I was feeling good about myself, too. I mean, it's nice to get the feedback, but also really encouraging for other practitioners to know that this is something they can do.
Well, I also love this book for that. It's the most encouraging bunch of information on addictions that I've ever read. But I want to say before we're done here, can you speak a bit about aging? Because some of us are doing that.
Oh, no, really? Oh, no, let's stop that right away.
But I think you can...
It's not allowed.
It can be undone to a degree, a lot of what we worry about, right?
A lot of aging. I mean, I look at people my age who have not been doing what I'm doing, and they don't look so good.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I don't look so good either, you know? We tend to...
No, I know what you mean. I just turned 70, and I'm... people say you're sort of a freak of nature. Well, I come from, my dad was like that when he was alive, you know. But still, I think there's a lot to be done. Your work here is so powerful for people to keep their brains strong. Do you want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, I mean, what happens, aging really is oxidizing. It's like rusting.
Mm.
So we rust inside.
Lordy.
Just like a rusty nail. Mm. Or just like apple that is exposed to the air. You know, you cut an apple and it turns brown.
Right.
That's oxidation. So what we need to do is everything that is possible so that we're not oxidizing our insides. And that is avoid allergenic foods, eat really good food organically. All these chemicals can age us because they all affect our DNA.
Mm.
The chemicals really break our DNA. The worst thing is getting cancer from this broken DNA. But and from the toxic stuff in the environment. So it's eating organically, using organic products, not using sprays, you know, like bug sprays and cleaning sprays and cleaning compounds that are toxic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just keeping our environment as clean as possible. Non-toxic paint, non-toxic carpet, having air filters, using skin care products that have good stuff in it instead of a bunch of unpronounceables.
Mm-hmm.
Eating, of course, we've been talking about this over and over again, eating right, taking the right kinds of nutrients, having a multivitamin. I have a simple one because some people don't want to take like 10 pills a day.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 2-a-day Better Balance Multi. It takes care of your basics. You do that, you take some extra vitamin C, you take some fish oil. I have it in the form of what's called Super EPA. Take 2 of those a day, and that's some good basic stuff.
Hmm. So you really worked on your products. Sounds like they're you get good feedback, don't you?
I do. I love my products. I created them for my patients.
And people can order them on your site, which
yes.
is
so
CassMD.
Yes, you don't have to be a patient to order them, because what I found was people were sending their friends to the office to get them, so I just put them up on my website, and now people can just order whatever they want. And they're pretty good descriptions about what's in them. The other thing is, you know, I actually have a gift for your listeners.
Oh, great. What is it?
Which is really a summary of some of what we've been talking about. It's called Reclaim Your Brain. Reclaim Your Brain. So if you go to my website, which is CassMD.com, and you click on the home page, and on the upper right-hand corner, there's a place to put in your name. Just your first name is fine. And your email address, and by return email, you're going to get a copy of this ebook called Reclaim Your Brain, and it really describes a lot of what we're talking about. And then the other thing people can do is get my Addicted Brain and How to Break Free, which is further looking at the whole addiction issue. So Reclaim Your Brain is more general about brain and neurotransmitters. Addiction is about specifically addictions. And then you can go to my supplement section, and it's all my wonderful supplements, and it explains what they are and how to use them.
Yeah, you have a lot of instruction for people here. It's wonderful. I really like this one on the addicted brain. I really feel it frees a lot of people. But
Thank you, because I don't want people to think that they're like a bad person or weak or immoral, but it's just their chemistry and that they can do something about it.
That's right, and I think part of what keeps them stuck is knowing they can't do anything about it or knowing that it's hard. I think that's
right. What
really keeps us jammed. Thank you so much, Dr. Cass.
It's been a pleasure.
I'm really enjoyed my talk with you and all the gifts you're bringing to the world. Thank you ever so
much. Oh, you're so welcome, and have a wonderful, wonderful day.
You too.
Okay,
take care. Good night.
Bye.
Wow, that was Dr. Hyla Cass. And boy, it's so encouraging to learn about addictions and about the fact our brain is that changeable. And she uses a lot of amino acids, so check her supplement options and her book, Natural Highs, and her ebooks, Reclaim Your Brain and The Addicted Brain. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, oh my gosh, we're all learning to be free and unlimit ourselves. Thank you so much for listening to Paradigm Shifters. And check into my website, veronicaentwistle.com. There's an Ask Veronica button there. And if you'd like to give any feedback on this show or any other shows or suggest guests or have a session with me and my guides and angels, check into that. Thank you again for listening. Good night and many blessings.